Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager. Carolyn Yeager brings you news and commentary on Holocaust revisionism, World War II history, free speech issues, and more. And now, here's Carolyn.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Carolyn Yeager. Tonight, I'm going to cover several things that I think merge into one in the end, or I hope they do, and that's the overall theme that is always in my mind, being what can be called truth in history. There are those who say you can never find or come to the truth because people see through their own filters and there is no truth for everyone. Sure, I know that, but I believe that in all events there is one true version of what actually took place. But the problem is that people want to prepare and present false versions because of their own vested interests. Naturally, you cannot necessarily get to the exact event the way it actually exactly happened, but you can get very close to it. One of the areas that concern me, as you know, is the truth about the so-called Holocaust, which bears on the truth about the German people during the period of the Third Reich, which can be called Truth for Germany. So tonight is going to be another installment along those lines. I want to start with a news release of just a few days ago put out by the Alie Wiesel Institute for the Study of the Holocaust in Romania. I have written a blog about that on Alie Wiesel Cons the World website, which you can find at aliewieseltattoo.com. And it is not on the front page, but it is the first item under recent posts on the left side, and it's entitled Wiesel Institute in Romania Says It Found Mass Grave of Jews. I recommend this article to you, but I'm going to go through it now. It comes from a newspaper article, an article, well, the one that I took was the most lengthy one I found in the Montreal Gazette. There are some shorter versions that appear here and there, but it's a news story, so we're certainly going to be hearing more about it. The title of this one in the Montreal Gazette is Mass Grave of Victims Unearthed in Romania. So, of course, it's a story about how, I'm going to let you know, because some bones have been found and what they're saying about it. I'm going to quote from this article, which begins actually identifying the photograph of some bones that have been uncovered. Says human remains are seen after archaeologists uncovered a mass grave of Jews killed by Romanian troops during World War II in a forest area near the village of Propicani, close to the city of Iasi in northeast Romania. And it identifies a photograph as by Anthony Cioflanca of the Alie Wiesel National Institute for the Study of the Holocaust in Romania. So far, so good. Now, my comment here is that Cioflanca is an employee of this of the Alie Wiesel National Institute in Romania, and he is the only archaeologist mentioned, and he doesn't seem to be a real archaeologist because there's no credentials given for him as to what he's associated with, what university or institute or whatever, except for Alie Wiesel's institute. Now we have the story is Dateline Bucharest, and as I mentioned, there is no journalist who wrote this story. This article and all the others that have come out are press releases, but actually you'd call this a news release, put out by the Wiesel National Institute for the Study of the Holocaust in Romania. And the media organs here take it and publish it as it's given to them, without checking facts, without checking anything. They just take it and put it out, and it appears to be news that has gone through some kind of a process, you know, that you assume is something you can believe, and yet it really has not. Now, the article itself says the usual kind of things, you know, that you read. A mass grave containing the bodies of Jews killed by the Romanian army during World War II has been discovered in a forest in northeastern Romania. This is according to the Elie Wiesel National Institute. Now, my first comment is that it has not been forensically determined that these are Jews, but they are being called Jews based on what we find later talking to the locals. So the article goes on, so far we exhumed 16 bodies, but this is just the beginning because the mass grave is very deep and we only dug up superficially. This is what was said by Adrian Cioflanca, the one mentioned earlier, and now they identify him as the researcher at the origin of the find. And my comment is, they have 16 bodies, they say, but they claim, I'm going to read this next, they claim 100, even though they haven't found them yet. So the article goes on, the Elie Wiesel National Institute for the Study of the Holocaust in Romania and Cioflanca both said they believe up to 100 bodies could be buried in the mass grave. Then they say that the find in the Volturi Forest in Propriana, about 350 kilometers northeast of Bucharest, is, quote, further evidence of the crimes committed against Jewish civilians in Romania. The Elie Wiesel Institute head, Alexandru Florian, said. Then they bring out another quote by Aurel Vanier, who is a representative for the Jewish community in the lower house of parliament there, who says, it is another testimony of a shameful period in Romania's history. So you see how these quotes are solely propaganda from two political activist Jews who are pointing the finger at Gentiles even before any evidence has been studied. And this is a formula that we have seen used over and over again, where it's all accomplished through getting your story out in the media without any kind of criticism or review. And even if it turns out not to be that way later, people have already read all about this and gotten the idea that, oh, they found some more Jews in mass graves. So going on with the article, it says, according to an international commission of historians led by Nobel Peace Laureate Elie Wiesel, himself a Romanian-born Jew, some 270,000 Romanian and Ukrainian Jews were killed in territories run by the pro-Nazi Romanian regime during 1940 and 1944. Now, again, I put in a comment. Now we come to the blanket statement of distorted historical truth. When did Elie Wiesel become a historian, I ask? He is not. Yet they say he led an international commission of historians. Where does the figure of 270,000 Romanian and Ukrainian Jews come from? What international commission that is claiming this is being referred to? Doesn't say. It must be the International Commission of Elie Wiesel's institute there in Romania. So the article goes on, this is the first time a Holocaust-era mass grave has been discovered since 1945, when 311 corpses were exhumed from three locations in a place in Romania, close to another place, according, again, to the Wiesel Institute. Now, this is quite a statement, isn't it? This is the first time a Holocaust-era mass grave has been discovered since 1945. And the last one was 311 corpses. Sorry if I'm raising my voice here. Now we have possibly 100 more. My comment, no wonder they're trying to make a big deal of it. They need to come up with something after 65 years of nothing but witness testimony. The article continues. For a long period of time, no research was done because the subject was taboo under the communist regime, and also for some years after the return of democracy in 1989. This also comes from Cioflanca, the Wiesel employee. And I say, just think how tough the communist regime of 45 to 89 made it to get any truth for Germans. The taboo in place by the Holocaust enforcers, also up until this very minute, makes it very difficult to disseminate any truth for German losses and who the true perpetrators were. Democracy is of no avail in this case, in their case. But, you know, speaking of taboo, they are talking about how the taboo of the Soviet communism hampered their research. But think of the taboo that they have in place now and have had in place. That taboo continues for anything other than themselves. So things improved, the article goes on, after the Wiesel-led commission report in 2004. Well, I won't go into that. He, you know, talked the Romanian president into saying that they needed to face up for their to the role played by the pro-Nazi regime of the wartime dictator. And then the mass grave was discovered, according to Sio Flanco. Now they call him a historian, gathered testimonies of local inhabitants who saw the killings of Jews. And he says that one of the witnesses escaped after convincing the Romanian troops that he was an Orthodox Christian. Now, I comment on this by saying now Sio Flanco is called an historian. Previously, he was called a researcher and also an archaeologist. But his actual credentials are never given. What are they? Because he gathered testimonies of local inhabitants, does this qualify him as a historian? Now it says that the victims could be Jews. And they were killed by Romanian military units, assisted at times by German soldiers. Of course, they're all called Nazis. And who killed at least 8,000 during a pogrom in 1941. And this is according to figures at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. These are the authorities and sources that they are using for their information. I comment, this is another blanket statement. The United States Holocaust Memorial Museum is not a credible, unbiased institution, but the product of Holocaust survivors, the Holocaust industry, Jewish organizations, and Jewish influence in and on the U.S. government. Therefore, their figures are meaningless without independent research and scrutiny. The article goes on to say that we will not be able to use DNA tests because we do not have any contact with potential relatives still alive, and to use DNA, you need to compare samples, Sio Flanco said. Of course, how they're going to tell that they're Jewish victims, I do not know, but I comment, no relatives? What about the witnesses who saw what took place? They don't know who any of them were. What about the one who escaped? Naturally, they don't want to use DNA, which could show that these are not Jewish bones, but Romanian or some other. Notice how they don't even consider that they might not be Jews at all. They want them to be Jews. I can't resist saying the more dead Jews it can find, the happier the Elie Wiesel Institute is. Now, it says that the exhumations are expected to go on after consultations with the authorities. See, they have to get permission from the authorities. Now, my comment, consultations means pressure, bribery, threats of a political and financial nature. In other words, we'll destroy your careers if you don't go along with us, and we'll do all in our power to blacken Romania's reputation and standing in the European Union. So what do you think the Romanian authorities are going to do? It then says the military prosecutor's office has opened an investigation. Of course, I ask, will this be a real investigation? Or one run by the Jewish archaeologists and historians? This is a necessary question. Now, the last paragraph is interesting. It says, after the find, the Elie Wiesel Institute deplored the fact that some Romanian cities, like Sibiu, Pitești, and Timișoara, still continue to celebrate the memory of Romanian officials who were war criminals and who took part in the persecution against Jews by giving name to streets. In case you didn't follow that, he's saying that some of the streets in these towns are named for Romanian officials who he says, his institute says, were war criminals who were persecuting Jews. So my final comment is, ah, Elie, his heart still full of revenge for those war criminals who dare to lay a hand on a Jew. That a Romanian official should have his name on a street make them all Jewish. Now, I'm suggesting here what... Make them all Jewish names as a proper memorial to their unique suffering. Then Elie Wiesel might be satisfied. Well, I talked about this because I thought that it was a good example of how these things are presented. And I, most of you listening to me understand that, and you don't need really to be instructed in it, but you will find it interesting to look at this article and to see what comes up from it in the future. I think that it's not much of a leap from the likes of Elie Wiesel and those who surround him and those who he actually works for, in my estimation, to another personality getting a lot of attention these days and by those in the self-described truth movement, and that is Alan Hart, a former journalist for the British Broadcasting Corporation, which is the way he proudly bills himself. We all know what the BBC stands for. And I just came up now with something that I thought was a little bit humorous. BBC stands for British Blood Capitulates. Okay. Now, I may be, some people, I may be going pretty far here, but I have been investigating this man, and I think it's, things need to be said, you know, and I'm saying here that he actually promotes the guilt of whites for what the Jews are doing. And he wants to place the Jews in control of white societies because of the, quote, principles of truth, unquote, that are found in Judaism. How do I know this? Well, I'm going to tell you. First, and it's an instructive lesson from the ant kingdom. Did you know that red ants will capture the pupae of black ants and raise the baby black ants as red ants? The black ants think they are red ants and will actually invade their own black ant nests to capture more black ant pupae because they think they are red ants, or they believe that they are not black but red ants. It works with people like this in our day. If you convince people that they are something they are not, as Judeo-Christianity does, for example, which is a term Alan Hart mentions a lot, and he's in a favorable way. He believes that we are a Judeo-Christian civilization. And as in using guilt to convince people that they owe a different group of people something, which, by the way, can never be repaid, then you can create many people who will invade their own nests and seek to turn their people into identifying more with the other people than with their own. In German, there's a word that means Nestbesmircher, which I can't come up with right now, but that sounds something like that, and that's what it translates into, meaning someone who works against those of his own nest by being disloyal or even unappreciative of his own in favor of another group, which is what I just described. And I mentioned Christian Zionists. Now, there's another breed called anti-Zionists. These are those who cannot bring themselves to be anti-Jewish or to say they're anti-Jewish, so they substitute the word Zionist. And then they can be on both sides and avoid being a nest besmircher, while also being seen as a neutral party. Anti-Zionism is currently the cause to champion, and that is no doubt one of the reasons that Alan Hart decided to write a book about it and cash in. Well, you know, that's my opinion. But only one of his reasons, for I can imagine more sinister reasons. I have heard Alan Hart a couple of times in the past year on internet radio programs, and I've seen him written up in articles and blogs on the internet and on YouTube in clips of him speaking. And in short, he's one of the newest sensations in the truth movement firmament, I would say. The truth movement, in capital letters, figures in the truth movement like to get mainstream media approval on their side, even a little bit, and even if just a little bit. And I don't blame them for that, because we all want to see that. But I think a far more critical spirit is in order. For example, Alan Hart didn't break out of the mold until 2007, when he wrote an open letter critical of Zionism to British Conservative Party member David Cameron. this is kind of late, 2007. It was the usual verbiage about Zionist terrorism and dispossessing the Palestinians, which I'm not trying to dismiss at all. It's important, but as I said, 2007 was a little bit late to catch on to this. Then in 2009, just last year, he came out with a book, or actually three books, a trilogy, entitled Zionism, the Real Enemy of the Jews. Since then, he's been on the book circuit, which is why I keep bumping into him and heard him on all these shows and see him all over the place. He's billed as a brave and courageous anti-Zionist. And he himself says that what he has to say is so important, and he is like the only one or the first one, or it's kind of amazing. He just says that people must read his book because they can't understand what's going on without understanding what's in his book, and I'm going to tell you some about that in a moment. But actually, when he speaks, he says some pretty mainstream things, and if you look up his website, which is www.alanhart.net, you'll find what he really stands for. First, I want to say that his website is clearly, to me, was created by his publisher to sell his book, again, titled Zionism, the Real Enemy of the Jews. This, nothing wrong with this either, but that's just the way it is. And everything that's on there has been carefully taken from his book, and actually, the main thing on there is his interview with his publisher, which gives out exactly what he believes, very interesting, and what's in his book. And this is what I read there, exactly what I heard him saying on these programs, word for word, you know, or in these articles, word for word. He repeats, he's got the mantra, he's got his thing down, and he repeats it over and over again. So there's no question what he has to say. It's like he's got a script, you know, this is his script. It's so careful, it's so exact all the time that he's either memorized it or he's got an actual script in front of him that he's following whenever he talks to someone. Say, I've heard him on, he's been with Jim Fetzer, he's been with another 9/11 spokesperson, Kevin Barrett, and he's been with Mark Glenn very recently. And he's actually been with Mark Glenn twice, but very recently, that's the last time I heard him, which is what got me going, just in October, really got me going about this man. Now, in his book, Hart basically says that Israel has gone too far and must be stopped for its own good by the United States. He even implies that it's America's fault that Israel has done what it's done, because America has allowed it and hasn't stopped them. He does say the Palestinians have been totally wronged, but in 2009 there was hardly anyone who wasn't saying that. So it certainly didn't take any special courage to do so. But it's what else he says that bothers me. And remember that whatever he says in his book, he also says wherever he goes. I've already explained that to you. Now here's a quote from his website where he says what's in his book and one of his statements. He says, the souvenirs I most treasure from my television reporting days are signed photographs of the two greatest opposites in all of human history, Golda Meir, Mother Israel, and Yasser Arafat, Father Palestine. He says Arafat signed his photograph with best wishes, but Golda's inscription, in her own hand, he says, was to Alan Hart, a good friend. And then Alan tells us, because I am a goy, non-Jew, in case we don't know what that is, the old lady's inscription meant and still means a great deal to me. This is not just one little instance where he speaks like this and no other instances. This is common for Alan Hart. Alan Hart is in high admiration of Jews and Judaism. And he obviously was very taken by Golda Meir. He will speak the truth about her and what she stood for, but at the same time, he is so maybe starstruck that he had this close relationship with these people, and he can write about them, and he interviewed them. So they play a large part in what he has to say. Next, he speaks of his empathy with what he calls the unspeakable but real fear of the Jews, that they could one day be victims of another Holocaust. Now we get into what I really object to about Alan Hart the most, and I'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. Stay with us.
We'll be right back with more on the Heretics Hour. You're listening to VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
And then we were all being told, for political reasons, I believe, the administration and the generals in command and so on, they were telling everybody, the American media, the American people, oh, everything is great. And I make reference in my book to the Bob Woodward series about inside the White House, which I believe it was in September of 07 that he came out with that. I'm not exactly sure of the date of that, but he had a multi-part series about the dysfunction within the Bush White House, about how things were going so poorly in Iraq, and Steve Hadley, the National Security Advisor, really was the one that was the nucleus behind the surge that began in February of 07.
When we think about the surge, when we think about Fallujah, Mr. Paul Bremer and what he did,
right.
You know, the looming question for people is, was it worth it? Was it worth it?
It being the invasion?
Everything. I mean, some people say Fallujah. I mean, you said before that you were not gung-ho. You said that you supported George Bush, but you were not, you know, all for the invasion. But when we think about Fallujah, was it a matter where some of these people making decisions said, we're going to show everybody how it's done, and then we're going to sort of reference Fallujah in the future?
What happened was when General Conway, Marine General Conway, when the Marines took over, and I talk about it in my book, when the Marines took over the Anbar province from the U.S. Army, there's animosity between the U.S. Marine Corps and the U.S. Army. I mean, most people know that. And when the Marines took over, it's a fact that they said, well, it's going to be a whole new game, and we're going to do it much better than the Army did it. We're even going to wear different uniforms. And the Army just said, you know, enough of this is enough. But they did go in there. The Marines did go in, and shortly thereafter was the incident with the Blackwater contractors that were who were murdered and dragged down the street and set on fire, and their bodies hung from the beams of the bridge in Fallujah over the Euphrates River. And the interesting thing was that people who were on the ground at that time, who I spoke to when I was in Iraq, said, and this is, you know, I hope people don't take this wrongly when I say it, but they said that the Blackwater contractors were acting pretty arrogant and pretty cocky, and made their intentions known before they were going through the town the following day.
And they're still there. I mean, under a different name, maybe under Z Services.
But
they're still there. That's a point that's often missed. It's not highlighted, the fact that, okay, the troops may be leaving, but there's still tons of contractors there.
Oh, well, that's the whole issue, Dina, of security contractors, which are essentially, mercenaries, but American mercenaries, not from another country. It gets into the whole thing about how America fights its wars now. I touch upon that in great detail also, because we don't get a declaration of war from Congress, and we fight with a fraction of the soldiers needed, and then we start to augment and supplement with security contractors like Blackwater and Triple Canopy and so on. And we're losing our focus on why we get involved in conflicts like this, and when we do, we don't go about it in a really concrete way.
Well, we're glad that you decided to share your story, Michael O'Brien, America's Failure in Iraq. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Let's return to the Heretics Hour, brought to you by VOR, ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I was talking about Alan Hart's views on the Holocaust, which he is not shy about bringing up. You'll find on his website, and I'm sure also in his book, or books, that he calls it the obscenity of the Nazi Holocaust. That's pretty strong language. Before this obscenity took place, most Jews were opposed to Zionism's colonial enterprise, he says, because he thinks Jews are good and moral people, while Germans are not. That's the way I read it. He would probably dispute that and say, oh, he's only talking about Nazis, but you know how that works. So he says that Judaism is known for its moral principles. Then he says, and I quote, but let me return directly to your question about sympathy for Zionism. Now, these are the questions his publisher put to him. I don't have any sympathy for it, but I do understand why, because of the Jewish experience of persecution, which climaxed with the genocide of the Nazi Holocaust, Zionism felt compelled to lie in public to justify what had to be done to create the modern state of Israel, and then to justify its behavior. I am now in the deepest primordial water, but noting that what I'm about to say has its complete context in my book, he's always selling his book, he's always reminding you that you need to read the book, I'll attempt to explain what I mean. If Zionism had been honest, it would have made a public statement after the Nazi Holocaust along something like the following lines. And this is what he says that the Zionists, if they were honest, would have said. Jews can never again trust Gentiles. We take it as a given that Jews will always be hated and that the monster of anti-Semitism will go on the rampage again. The Zionist state will exist to be the refuge of last resort for Jews everywhere and thus an insurance policy to guarantee the survival of the Jewish people. Zionism will do whatever it takes to secure and maintain this guarantee, and if what we do causes our state to be regarded as a pariah by the rest of the world, well, the rest of the world can go to hell. And now, to be fair here, I know that Alan Hart is saying that this is what the Zionists believed, and that he says that they are misguided and a little paranoid, and that this is not true, and this is why Zionism is the enemy of the Jews, because it's causing them to follow lines like that. And yet, he does say that while he doesn't have any sympathy for this view, he does understand and invites readers to understand where it comes from. And I add that, of course, from everything that he says, it comes from historical anti-Semitism and the Nazi Holocaust, which he definitely believes in. He believes that anti-Semitism is a real thing that does threaten the Jews, or has in the past. He believes in all the so-called Jewish persecutions in which Jews were simply victims. And even though he says that today it really doesn't exist and that they should drop the whole thing. Well, it doesn't exist because the Semites that are meant by anti-Semitism are in total control. And of course there's, you know, the only anti-Semitism that arises is in reaction to the behavior of these Jews. Not just Zionists, but Jews. And this is always what it's arisen from. And the Nazi Holocaust is just another a symptom of all of this rather than a cause of it. Now, I'm going through all this, my listeners, because Alan Hart is being billed as such a bold and courageous new voice for somehow standing up to the powers that be and a part of the alternative movement. And I don't see that this is the case in a real way. So Hart also says, he says that his book is the call of a concerned and caring goy himself, he says me, for the Jews to become the light unto nations, not least because the rest of us need them to be. Can you believe that? I could hardly believe that when I saw that. I said, wow. And then he goes on, and I don't mind anybody knowing what I'll do if I'm accused of anti-Semitism. I'll demand a retraction with an apology. And if I do not receive satisfaction on that account, I will sue. And then he tells us how he, when he announced his book, he included with it his press release a feature article that he wrote, which is entitled The Monster of Anti-Semitism, How to Destroy It, which highlights the difference between Judaism and Zionism, and therefore why it is perfectly possible to be passionately anti-Zionist without being in any way, shape, or form anti-Semitic, and without being anti-Israel as a state. So, I mean, it's very, very clear that Alan Hart likes and approves of Jews who are not Zionists. He wants Israel to continue being a state. He is not anti-Israel. He thinks that it's possible for the non-Zionists, who he calls about 50% of Israelis, to get rid of the Zionists and then have a perfectly nice Israel there in the Middle East, along with Palestine and the other places, even though the Jews will retain. He doesn't say anything about changing boundaries or any of that, and I doubt that he would go very far with that. So what I see is that he is one of these people who has come in pretending to be, you know, one of these reformers and be on the side of those who are extremely angry at Israel, because Israel is under threat, and in order to save Israel and to deflect this anger of the world, and including white Europeans more and more, and even some governments, that something has to be done. And so he is pretending that he is one of these white knights, and he's going to take it, but only just a little way. He goes only so far, and then we're going to pretend like there's no more Zionists, and then the Jews can continue to do what they've always been doing. He doesn't talk about Jewish bankers. He doesn't talk about Jewish Wall Street. He doesn't talk about how the Jews are robbing us blind through their hanging together networks that have been formed for centuries now. And, of course, he reminds us about the Holocaust and the Nazis, and he has nothing new to say about that. Now, he also says that anti-Semitism is on the rise again. And, of course, he says this is because of the behavior of Israel. And he buys the view that this new anti-Semitism is anti-Israelism. And for a lot of people it is. But for those of us who know better and understand deeper, it's not just about Israel. The negative influence of what they call themselves Semitics has been going on for, well, since they first rose up as a people. So I'm going to end the excerpts from Hart's publisher's interview with this. It says, to date, it has not been possible to tell the truth because the mainstream publishing world, like much of the mainstream media as a whole, has been frightened of offending Zionism. He says, to offend Zionism is to invite, among other things, the charge of anti-Semitism, and because the slaughter of 6 million Jews was a Gentile and not an Arab or Muslim crime, there is nothing Gentile publishers, writers, broadcasters, and politicians fear more than being accused of anti-Semitism. Even, he says, when the charge is politically motivated and false and amounts to blackmail and blah, blah. But what he's actually saying here is totally false, that Gentile publishers or all those in the media, writers, broadcasters, and all those in government politicians fear being labeled as an anti-Semite because they feel guilty of the slaughter of 6 million Jews because it was Gentiles who did it. He doesn't say that the reason that they fear being called an anti-Semite is that that will ruin them and destroy their life and their career and their family and everything else for all time, because the Jews control all of this, control the entire media, and say what can be published, who can write, who can broadcast, and what politicians will be elected. So, you know, this is so just beyond the pale that any of our actual truth tellers and our people who say that they're, you know, the leading voices in the truth movement would go along with this man. But of course, this is part and parcel of throwing the Germans under the bus or under the truck. And this is something that I bring up often, but it has been going on for so long. And actually, it's been going on since before World War I. And I'm not, of course, not going to go into all that history now, but I do go into that history often. And this has been going on for a long time. But since World War II, it has been very much standard practice for everyone, even people who have no animosity toward Germans or Germany and even have sympathy. But it's like, well, it's even among those who are like in my own camp will often will celebrate the idea of calling the Israelis Nazis. They will say, oh, yeah, whenever there's a cartoon likening the Israelis to the Nazis, and that what they're doing Gaza to the Holocaust concentration camps, they just applaud. They think that's great. They don't understand what it's doing. And what it's doing is keeping that wrong history alive and keeping us from actually freeing ourselves in a way that we can get to what I was talking about earlier, truth in history. Now, we need to remember that Alan Hart is British. And the British attitude toward World War II is quite rigid, especially among the BBC crowd. There's a few exceptions, but even those who are exceptions kind of have a hard time breaking from that particular party line. Now, there is no interest in looking into that history among the British, most British, generally, and into the Holocaust. Why? Well, I'm going to enumerate for you some of the Friends of Israel in the UK. Now, Alan Hart makes a big deal of saying that the total blame for Zionism falls on America. It falls on the American people, the American politicians, the American system, everything American. Never does he mention any role that the United Kingdom politicians play in this. And yet, here's just a touch of what goes on in the United Kingdom. We have these organizations among the members of Parliament. The Conservative Friends of Israel. This is the members of Parliament in the Conservative Party. Members of Parliament, of course, are equal to our congressmen and maybe senators combined, kind of like. And that is 80% of the MPs in the Conservative Party are members of this group, Conservative Friends of Israel. Now, they may not all be convinced, or they may not be members because they really want to be, but they felt they had to be, but anyway, they are. And among them is the current now Prime Minister, David Cameron. Also, there's the Liberal Democrats for Israel. The Liberals are another party in Great Britain. Their slogan is to maximize support for Israel. And then there's the Labor Friends of Israel. We have the Labor Party, you know, and this is the largest special interest group in the Labor Party. And it includes Tony Blair and Gordon Brown as members. And we know that Zionism is probably most pervasive in the Labor Party. They kind of made a deal at one point to become friends in order to get the support they needed to win the elections, and they were in power for a long time. Then we have even in Ireland, Northern Ireland Friends of Israel, and Ian Paisley is a member. So Alan Hart is certainly fits right in with this tremendous friendship he feels for Israel and for Jews. Now, there's another thing that kind of surprised me on his website, where there was a part about financial support. And even though this website is about Alan Hart's book and selling his book, although now he's writing some blog articles on it, they are asking for donations. I found that also very, very chutzpah. Whilst Alan's, it says here, this is from the website, whilst Alan's U.S. publisher has the courage to publish his book, Zionism, the Real Enemy of the Jews. Well, I just told you some of what's in this book, and there's nothing more far out than that. I mean, there's nothing that's more courageous. There's nothing courageous beyond what I've told you about. So, yet they think it is. They don't have the finances to promote it. His publisher doesn't. He says, book promotion usually involves getting the author onto radio talk shows. Well, they did that. TV talk shows, book signing engagements, debates, etc. And as the purpose of this book is to stir up an honest debate about the situation, this kind of promotion is the current need of the time. And he says that they say, now this is the publisher's writing this on his site, on behalf of Alan, that the cost of touring the U.S. is a lot, and contributing towards it is the best way that you can support Alan right now. We're trying to sort out a better donation mechanism, but in the meanwhile, PayPal has made it very easy, and you can donate by following the PayPal link on the side. Good grief, what has he done for any of us, or anybody in the United States, or anything, except Jews maybe, that anybody should be donating to him, brother? Okay, now I want to talk about, I just have to bring this up too, because he's also made a big splash in the 9/11 truth movement, which is not about Zionism, but in a sense it is too. And he especially, in May 2010, now that was just this year, just a few months ago, he finally came out with something on 9/11. Again, that is extremely tardy. And he was on the Kevin Barrett show, and he said this. He said that consultants close to one of the world's most prominent construction companies assured him that the Twin Towers were brought down by a controlled ground explosion, not with planes. Now, this was supposed to be big news a few months ago. Well, it was just because they say, oh, here's this BBC journalist who's saying this. Isn't that amazing? Oh, wow, you know. And, of course, everyone jumps for joy at that. Now, he says this. My guess is that at an early point, they said to the bad guys in the CIA, and I question who they is, but it has to be the Mossad. So I assume that they means the Mossad, that at an early point, the Mossad said to the bad guys in the CIA, hey, this operation's running. What do we do? And the Zionists and the neocons said, let's use it. Now, he believes that these Arabs and the Al-Qaeda had some kind of a plan in mind, and they were trying to do an operation. And then the Mossad, of course, found out about it because, as he admits, there's nothing they don't know about. So they said, hey, you know, we'll take over this operation and we'll do something. So then Hart's idea is that the Mossad talked to some bad people in the CIA, and then the Zionists and neocons in America is what he means, not anywhere else, is American neocons said, let's use it. Now, this is his big theory that he comes up with finally in May 2010. Here's more Alan Hart. Alan Hart wrote a blog on just this past October 30th. And it's about Rupert Murdoch. Now, here again, this shows us, reveals a lot about how limited and weak is what is how far he goes in this. He doesn't see Murdoch as Jewish at all. And he said that Murdoch was coming out against the rise of anti-Semitism. And Hart again makes the point that anti-Semitism is actually anti-Israelism today. And he says that the danger for the Jews of the world is that it will be transformed into violent anti-Semitism at a foreseeable point in the future if the Zionist state is not called and held to account for its past crimes and is allowed by the major powers to go on committing new ones. Now here, you see, he blames the major powers, like Chomsky. And the major power, he's always really the United States. And I'm not at all trying to take away blame from the United States. But he doesn't want to blame the Jews or Israel because they're only doing what they would naturally feel they need to do and try to get away with. You know, he exonerates them and blames, just like Chomsky does, and blames the major powers for allowing this to happen. And what he is concerned with is that there will be another Holocaust. He actually says that. He says he is trying to prevent another Holocaust to take place because people are so, this anti-Semitism is rising because of Israel's actions, and therefore that has to be stopped, really in order to save the Jews, as I said before, and save Israel. the point I'm trying to make here is that he posits this idea that Israel was actually intended to solve the problem of anti-Semitism, which is what the Zionists have said. And he wants to kind of get rid of Zionism and get rid of that kind of thinking. So Israel can just be, a legitimate state, behaving itself more properly, but continuing where it is, and everything else continuing as it is, the Jews throughout the world continuing as they are, and nothing changing, and his attitude in constant attack on the Nazis and the Holocaust is part of, and parcel of, keeping the current order intact and the current history intact, in which the Jews were victims and the Jews have to be considered and the Jews have to be protected, and the Nazis and including the Germans and all Gentiles need to help do this, because the Jews are the light unto the nations, and we need them to be that, as I quoted from him earlier, which is probably the most outrageous thing of all that he said. And then he also says here, he's criticizing Rupert Murdoch, which is also, so brave and courageous of him. And he says, if I had the opportunity to address Mr. Murdoch directly, I would say to him the following. If you really care about the Jews, I mean the Jews as people, as opposed to their money, you would put your media empire at the service of the truth of history. And now I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that Alan Hart talks a lot about the truth of history. And he says right out that he is one of the sole proprietors of the truth of history, that if you'll find it in his book, and anybody who wants to know the truth of history needs to read his book, this trilogy of his about Zionism is the enemy of the Jews, and then they will find the truth of history. And he sees himself as a proprietor of that. Well, I also see myself as something of a, not a proprietor, but of a lot of knowledge about the truth of history, and I have equal concern for it, and I think a more honest concern for it. And it is the truth of history that if we accept people like Alan Hart, because he says some things that are helpful, that might change the mind of a certain amount of people, that make them a little bit more critical of Zionism, in the long run, what does it gain us? It does not gain if the purpose of it is to reinforce and hold in place the falsity of history that we have now and the current structure and order that we have. But he is pretending as though he is a kind of a world-shaking, individual who is doing his come out with these very important ideas and words and thoughts and progressive thinking. It's just a hoax. I think it's a hoax. You see, I think that he is very likely a British agent. He's very likely been British intelligence even from the beginning. In his career as a journalist with the BBC, for those of you who don't know, you need to know that the BBC is a British government media outlet. It is owned and operated by the government. And intelligence is very well established in the United Kingdom, has been for a long time. They have it all figured out, and they're everywhere. And so, he could be. I don't know that he is. Who's going to prove such a thing? It doesn't matter. It's based on what he says, what he has said, and what he hasn't said. But the fact is that he seems to be a person who is there to lead people astray. So that's it for tonight, my friends. Thank you for listening, and hope to see you next week.
Thanks for listening. The Heretics Hour returns Monday evening, 9 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.